Let's go to our political commentators this morning, Gareth Hughes and Bridget Morton. Kia ora, good morning, Korua.
Morena.
Kia ora, Gareth, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Fantastic. Good to have you here. Now, let's talk first of all this morning. I suppose we should just really dive into the Three Waters situation and the entrenchment clause back down. Bridget, if I can come to you first on this. It's become a bit of a mess, really, hasn't it?
Oh, it's a complete and utter mess. But just before I dive into that, of course, I've got a number of clients in Three Waters space, so an important disclosure to make. But I think in terms of going back to this entrenchment clause, this is more than sort of a mess. This really shows that the government is completely and utterly, I think, the final sort of nail in the coffin a little bit on their Three Waters narrative, because they used urgency. They pushed through this clause. They, you know, have had so much confused narrative over the last week about who knew what when it clearly went to caucus, it was clearly the cabinet. The Prime Minister this morning has continued to use weasel words on it to try and get away any responsibility. And for me, the big frustration was, and this is, you know, putting my public lawyer sort of hat on, in Chris Hipkins' statement yesterday, he sort of seemed to imply that if Parliament had better rules around entrenchment, they wouldn't have done this. The rules are there. They, you know, they obfuscated them. They went back on them. The important thing here is they tried to use entrenchment to entrench a policy position where fundamentally we use entrenchment for the things that are really our constitutional safeguards, and they abused that, and there was no recognition of the fact that they had actually done something quite seriously wrong in terms of our constitutional conventions. And I think that is what the most frustrating place is, because that just really shows that they just don't care. It's only when the politics came back to slap them that they actually made a change of course here.
Gareth.
Yeah, well, I agree with Bridget. It looks messy and it's dragged on for far too long. And, you know, from their perspective, the government, the whole point of putting this through urgency was to try and to clear the decks before Christmas and get it done and dusted. But in fact, it's now dragged on for a week, or will be nearly two by the time it's almost cleared up. So we're kind of at that stage of the media cycle now where it's questioning who knew what when and whose mistake was it and who's covering for who. One academic suggested that it was a proposal which they thought just wouldn't be acted upon. So the question for the government is, at this stage, you know, was it simply a communication mistake, an understanding mistake? Was it a mistake that they were hoping that just wouldn't get picked up by the public? But look, it really does look messy. Look, everyone's really tired at the end of the year. It's kind of understandable, but they will be disappointed. And the way the Prime Minister was talking about it this morning on Morning Report, I thought it was quite interesting. You know, she described it as, she wouldn't say who knew what when, but they were going to be, quote, taking it as a team. So that's code, I believe, that someone's made a mistake, but they're not going to throw them under the bus. So, yeah, a little bit messy. Not the ideal way they'd be wanting to finish the year.
Not the way they'll be wanting to finish the year, Gareth, but also the situation around Three Waters in particular. It's already controversial. And something like this surely undermines the public trust quite considerably.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the bigger, actually more important issue than just the parliamentary process and sort of the messiness. It's the public sense that Three Waters is already being driven by a bit of a secret agenda. Now, I don't believe that at all. I think it's simply the case trying to get more affordable, health, safe drinking water. But it is unhelpful for those narratives and perception for Labour. If there's, I guess, maybe one ray of sunshine, though, it really has shone a spotlight on the issue of privatisation, given National's track record and past action in this area. You know, it is a legitimate public concern. You know, what would a future National government do in this case? It's also raised this, again, much more important issue of entrenchment and our constitutional norms that we're evolving. And it was interesting that Eugenie Sage, again on Morning Report this morning, pointed out that what happened with this amendment was entirely consistent with our standing orders. If you can get a majority of 60 or 65%, you can entrench that under our current rules. And I just hope that this really does engender a long-term conversation, which is those areas where we do have consensus, particularly on things like governmental public assets, which are built up over generations or under multiple governments, that could be flogged off by a single government or coalition with a small majority, should actually have some degree of entrenchment. And look, hopefully if it encourages better long-term cross-party decision-making, I think that can only be a good thing.
Bridget.
Yeah, I don't think that this is where the difficulty is, because, you know, Gareth refused to, that we've got some sort of consensus on this issue. And I think generally you've got an idea that most, you know, if you look at a popular poll, most people don't prefer asset sales. But if you go back and see, you know, you have had successive governments run on selling assets off to balance books, etc., and they've got the mandate to get into government. So this is where it gets really tricky, because I just don't see, there's very, very few issues where we actually do have real consensus, and that's the point of having a democracy. That's why we have a parliament, that's why we have MMPs, that we've got these coalitions, you know, that they can hold each other to account on it. And so I think we need to be really careful that we just don't, just because we think it's of importance to us as individuals or as a particular political party, that we don't then assume that that should be the view for everyone else, because we should not be undermining our parliamentary conventions and binding those future parliaments against making the policy decisions that they may wish to make.
Now, National and ACT making hay with this, of course. They didn't actually notice, though, when it was going through.
That's not quite correct. Yeah. If you go look back at the Hansard, yeah, and you look at Simon Watts, who's a spokesperson on Three Wood, he did discuss it then. I think they could have made a much bigger thing out of it at the time.
Because it wasn't a big deal at the time, was it?
No. But I can kind of understand, as you say, it was under urgency. I think, you know, Simon Watts spent something like 10 hours in the House or something. You know, obviously the media didn't see it as well. Mm. I can see why... you know, it wasn't caught at the time, but I don't think it's correct to say that National didn't notice. They definitely did.
So what happens now, do you think, Gareth, with Three Waters? I mean, it's become more and more mired with this as the sort of the latest instalment. How difficult is this going to be to continue through, and especially for the Minister Nanaia Mahuta?
Well, I mean, it is going to continue. So they'll send it back to the Committee of the House, remove this amendment, which was inserted. Then they'll pass the third reading, no doubt before Christmas, and then it will be done and dusted. So then it turns to the implementation phase. And the government has been very resolute on this issue. They've had multiple off-ramps, particularly when regional mayors and the Auckland mayor came together with an alternate proposal. They've been resolute on this process, so they'll just be rolling it out next year. I think there are some questions around Minister Mahuta's selling of this policy. You know, this is a good policy, ultimately, and we've seen some high-profile, dangerous water health scares and illnesses in New Zealand, so this should be a real positive for them. They're going to have to try and reclaim the narrative. So questions have to be asked around how it was sold, how
do you think
it was campaigned on.
Yeah, do you think that's come as a surprise that, you know, to the government, that this has been such a lightning rod?
Well, no, given, you know, water is so essential to us, it's, you know, investments that billions of dollars have been invested over generations in New Zealand. It's something we've all got an intimate connection with. Wrap in those co-governance questions as well. But I think this is a bit of an area the government struggled with this term, is selling some of these policies. You can see the same thing with broadcasting, with the TVNZ-RNZ merger, things like hate speech reform, where they sort of launch a policy, but they don't do the follow-up, really selling it or really engaging with the public and having those strong sort of public debate and convincing people. I think often it's been left up to proxies or just hope that people would understand the rationality of why they were doing these reforms. That'll be a big lesson for them next year. With these reforms that they're embarking on, they've really got to sell a vision of why they're doing it and why it's going to benefit people.
I think we just need to be careful to say that it will be done and dusted by Christmas, because this bill is actually unfinished. What has actually still got to happen is that there's meant to be an amendment bill to this bill that actually deals with the ownership elements, which is quite, you know, the big key thing about the financial reforms of the four entities has always been what they can borrow to invest in the infrastructure. So that's really key to actually whether or not these are going to succeed. And also dealing with the economic regulator around these prices and things. So there's two key really big elements of this still to deal with. So it's just not a matter of just implementing. The government still has to come back to Parliament with more legislation on this.
Now, you're talking there as well about co-governance and mentioning Willie Jackson. Some interesting decisions to be made possibly next year, but the minister beginning to signal that perhaps there will be a taiho on the co-governance issue. Why do you think that is, Bridget?
Well, I think they can see that it's politically damaging. And once again, a disclosure that I've got a client working in this space. So I think for them, they can see that, you know, Three Waters, one of the lessons they have seen out of that is that co-governance has just sort of grown to swamp all other issues in many ways. And they don't want that going into next year. I think you can also see that there's a bit of fractioning within Cabinet and caucus about whether or not this is the platform they want to run on going into next year. You know, Minister Parker with the RMA reforms could not be more resolute that he was pushing pushing back against co-governance. There was no co-governance in this, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no doubt been some pretty hard conversations in Cabinet. And I think, you know, it was really interesting. There's a piece, a blog post from Chris Trotter, who was traditionally, you know, off the left, from the last week or so, really talking about how, why, you know, they seem to be holding on to sort of co-governance in the Three Waters space so tightly. And he's really drawn some parallels, which I thought was interesting, with the fourth Labor government's sort of hold on Rogernomics and how that really created destruction within the party. So I think if the party's sort of looking forward to it, they know next year people care more about cost of living, what the economy's doing, and getting distracted by a co-governance is not going to do them any favours.
Yeah, Gareth, what do you make of this possible backing away by Willie Jackson?
Yeah, well, I mean, Labour is behind in the polls, in the majority of them. So I think they're taking a bit more of a conservative, risk-averse approach. You know, politically, they're really going after that middle voter. They can point to a lot of change in this area, $1 billion for Māori initiatives in the last budget, the Māori Health Authority, Matariki Day, but they've kind of got to pick their battles. So it's pretty clear that from the signals that Willie Jackson's been indicating, he says that, you know, my inclination is I'm leaning towards putting the work on hold for the UN Declaration on Indigenous people. So it's pretty clear that this is one area where they're going to go for a slowdown. Again, we've seen this big debate where particularly ACT, New Zealand First, National have really been pushing hard on this issue, kind of stoking the worst angels of our nature. But while we may see a temporary slowdown, I think it's pretty clear that we are going through significant cultural change. And this is the general trend of direction. We're seeing it with Māori seats around council tables. You know, we're seeing it in things like booked out te reo courses. You know, people know how to do their pepeha over Zoom meetings now. And look, when you saw 45,000 people singing tūrangati, singing in te reo at the Women's Rugby World Cup, I think that was a clear indication that New Zealand's moved on a long way from what we saw 17 years ago with the Oriwa Iwi Kiwi debate. You know, this is a clear sense of direction, and New Zealand's changing whether some of those anti-voices like it or not.
I think it's absolutely right that I think people are seeing more, much more value in embracing, you know, the different diversity within our culture. But I really sort of am worried about what sort of happened, I think, particularly in this co-governance space, is a lot of it seemingly has happened behind closed doors. So if the country decides that it wants to go down this path, it wants to, you know, embrace co-governance, it should be sort of a constitutional conversation that's happening that people can debate. And that does mean that there's going to be uncomfortable conversations, things that people don't like to hear, but that's part of, once again, having a strong democracy. So I think there is without a doubt that the government can see going into an election year that they are not in the position in which they can even really explain what they mean by co-governance, what that means in practicality, and so that they know that they are not well-versed to be able to actually have that conversation. So I think it's absolutely, from a political point of view, the right thing to do. But I think also for Labour, they've actually got to kind of go back to the drawing blocks and go, well, actually, what are we trying to achieve here and what are we communicating to the people?
A couple of other things to mention. On you go.
Oh, no, sorry. I agree with Bridget on that point. And it kind of goes back to my earlier point that Labour have got to back and publicly communicate these changes. In fact, when you look at who in the political realm has been most sort of vocal advocating for it, it's the former National Attorney General, Chris Finlayson, who's been trying to exclaim how it's benefited Whanganui or in the Uruwera National Park. He's been a champion actually saying that people should not be scared of this and it should be embraced for ultimately better decisions.
If we can touch on a couple of other things before the half hour, of course, we've got the Hamilton by-election, Hamilton West by-election coming up. And of course, it's a by-election, Bridget, but it's really national issues that are coming to the fore here.
Yeah, but I mean, a particular concentrate, it seems, in Hamilton. You know, I heard Luxon describe, you know, Hamilton as the ram raid capital of New Zealand. And when you look at the numbers, they are indeed, you know, suffering from ram raids, like unlike many others. And the fact that, you know, National is stating that by the end of the year there'll be more gang members than police in the Waikato, which is, I mean, completely frightening, I think. So I think without a doubt it is a little bit of a bellwether on sort of what's happening at a sort of national level, but they are feeling it in a particularly concentrated way in Hamilton. But I don't think that is necessarily reflecting people getting out to vote, though. That seems to be the key concern of all the parties, is there's a lot of people saying, yeah, of course we support you, of course, or of course you're going to win, but not actually getting out the door to vote. I had a look at the turnout stats, and I think these are as of Friday sort of stats, but I mean they're about 2,500, which is a third of where the Tauranga by-election was at this point. Sorry, half of where the Tauranga by-election and a third of where the general election was. Those are pretty frightening numbers.
That's really low.
Really, really low. Because almost definitely the person who gets in at this election is going to probably be in for multiple terms. So it may not change the government or the makeup of parliament, but in terms of a local advocate, it's pretty clear that this person is going to be there for a while. So people do need to go out and vote.
And also a quick word, Gareth, I think you're wanting to talk about the visit of the Finnish Prime Minister.
Yeah, well, we saw some pretty embarrassing questions from in the press conference, you know, and it really highlighted some of the gender issues that our politicians have to face. But, you know, there was, I think, good reasons why we'd have a visit from the Finnish leader down to New Zealand, not least the, you know, the Russian invasion, their neighbour. We've got this looming trade deal with Europe. But also, I think we've got a lot to learn from the Finns. You know, they've got they're richer than us per capita, despite being similar size, invest almost four times more in R&D, better educational stats and equality stats. So I just hope that we don't look at, you know, visits from visiting leaders like this a bit askew and think it's strange. We should be encouraging it. And I think the more collaboration and political conversations we can have between some of those Scandinavian states, really high-performing states, New Zealand, look, there's lots to learn from both countries, I believe.
Yeah, I think in terms of Gareth, I think there's obviously we should be embracing any sort of international leader that sort of comes here and wants to have open dialogue. But I think the over-focus on that one question that was really badly asked, but legitimately I think the grounds were, why is the Finnish Prime Minister here, which most of the country were asking. And I get frustrated, I think, particularly as a woman, that these sort of clips go around of, if this is, you know, this is our performative sort of feminism. Actually, if we want more women to succeed, you've got to spend your time not sharing on social media, actually just, you know, encouraging more younger women through the office, more gender diversity in roles, etc.
Yes, going viral for all the wrong reasons is not always the look you're going for, really, is it?
No, but also people were pushing that further and further, and so I just sort of come back to, like, I get frustrated that that was the conversation we were having rather than much more important questions about, you know, page gaps and board representation and all of those important issues.
Final word to you, Gareth.
Oh, that is true. But the PM definitely showed her class in that press conference with that response, which again has gone viral around the world and once again sort of shown her international credibility, which I think has only got to be a good thing for New Zealand.
Ngā mihi, thank you both of you very much. Good to have you in the studio as well. Bridget Morton there from the right and Gareth Hughes from the left, our political commentators this morning.